At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Well, this sucks.
Just looking at your wall, I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, my front entryway of my home is my home man cave, my home office, until I build, we're looking to build a building out back, but my wife is gracious enough to let me have the front entryway. So this and one other bedroom, you'll see this room, and then there's a spare bedroom that's got all my whitetails and any kind of Texas stuff in it.
Some pretty cool deer back there. Those are some nice mounts.
Yeah, everything in here is archery and western. So all my mule deer, elk, antelope, and stuff like that are in here. And then, I got a bobcat I killed over here in East Texas, but that other room's got all my whitetails and my big hog and turkey and stuff like that, you know. But eventually, man, I'm going to build me you ever heard of a beer joint? Back in the day, you go to a beer joint and a honky tonk's kind of the same thing. Well, I grew up in honky tonks and beer joints back in my 20s. And so when I build my man cave, it's going to have a jukebox and a bunch of Waylon Jennings memorabilia, and it's going to look like a beer joint honky tonk, but it's going to have all my heads hanging in it.
So. Nice.
Yeah. But I'm a devout Christian, but I still like beer joints.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm working on one for myself just because my wife said that's enough. No more.
She's seen enough of your dead animals.
Yeah. I keep adding to it every year. There's a couple more, and then my full mount cougar just came home, so I'm kind of just like stuck just nonchalantly in the living room. She's like, no,
just by the window. Just like your little pet cat just looking outside.
No more. Yeah,
I just got back from a bow fishing trip in Louisiana. Now I am hell-bent on getting a 6 foot plus alligator gar. I want one as bad as I want a 200 inch mule deer. They're rare. Anything over 6 foot's rare. So I want like a 6 or 7 foot alligator gar. And I already told my wife that's a full mount. She's like, yeah, well, that's not happening until you get your other building, because she don't want that in the house. My wife is awesome. We've been together since we were 17. She don't care what I do. She's super gracious, but she's like, look, man, we got to get you a building. We got to get all this stuff in one spot, because now I got to walk people through the house to see all of it. And she's like, we just need it all in one spot.
So no, those are some nice muleys there. That's for sure. Yeah. I guess that's why they call you the muley slayer, eh?
Yeah. I'm not the giant slayer, but I've shot a pile of mule deer. I've killed a bunch of them, man. And I love them. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's cool. Hey, where can I get one of your hats?
I can send you one. I just got a whole nother order made. Yeah. I've dabbled in them for a long time, and I finally, I just stumbled onto a guy that made these for me, and they're exactly what that's what I always wanted. And so, yeah, man, I'll hook you up.
Those will be a hit. Yeah, show some pictures of that.
Yeah, yeah, give me a little IG love, and I'll hook you up, man.
Do a little Instagram reel and everything, and we'll get some real numbers going.
Yeah. Heck cool. Yeah, man. No, I'll hook you up. Yeah, when we're done, you'll just shoot me an address, and I'll ship you guys off.
Yeah, we'll do a trade or something. That's awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So, you know, I knew the Muley Slayer, love hunt muleys. I actually only got into mule deer hunting probably in around 2000. Oh, man. Like, I started hunting mule. Like, I lived up in northern BC, and there was no mule deer up there. There was blacktails and a lot of moose. So, didn't really get into mule deer hunt until I moved down to the southeastern part of the province. And I started getting into it around 2012. I slowly got into it and I started, you know, seeing how cool they were. And you just like, they're not like any other critter out there. They're just, you know, they're, you can't pattern them like whitetails. You can't call them like moose or elk. They're just, there's something about them that just is completely different. And it took me it probably took me 2012, took me about 4 years, three years. And I got one. And then I slowly got better every year. And then, you know, ever since then, it's been pretty good. And I found that you get out of it what you put into it. It all comes down to how much work you put into it before the season starts, your scouting and all that stuff. But man, I'm just looking at some of those muleys on your wall. And yeah, there's something about mule deer that sure makes them unique and amazing. That's for sure.
Yeah, I love them, man. I just stumbled into them in my 20s and, man, I've been after them hardcore ever since. So I'm in love with them. You guys have some great mule deer hunting up there. And some of you like about Alberta and Saskatchewan has outstanding mule deer, right? Especially Alberta.
Yeah, they do.
I've never been up there. I've been to Canada once. I went bear hunting Saskatchewan back in 2006. But I've never been up there mule deer hunting. I haven't even killed a mule deer here in Texas.
Oh,
it's hard. Yeah, because it's like 1% of the state's public, right? And
That's
everybody's
crazy.
And everybody's your friend. Everybody invites me turkey hunting, hog hunting, whitetail hunting. Nobody invites you to go mule deer hunting because it's such a, you know, anybody that has them knows what they have and they don't share. And that's understandable because it's all private land here, you know. So I want to get a Texas one someday, but and a Canadian and a Mexico. I'd love to go to Mexico and hunt them. But right now, I just stick to the mountains, you know, the inner mountains.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Alberta, Saskatchewan, they have a lot more and bigger mule deer than we do. We have a lot of like mountain bucks, so they tend to have bigger bodies and less antler size. And then you get west, and then you get into the blacktails. So we don't have a heavy mule deer population here, but there's been some, you know, good mule deers taken out of British Columbia. I think there was a 300 taken out of here, I believe. The Okanagan, actually.
We had one around town here that was kind of, it wasn't really a town, I won't call it a town buck, but it came to like the town limits and then it would head back up into the mountains. It was just part of its little routine or whatever. And someone ended up shooting it and it was 200 inch buck and it was like, it was big. But we don't see those genetics. Like, we've got the genetics around, but our mule deer population in our valley here took a big hit a few years back, just mismanagement and stuff like that and habitat. Yeah, we still have tons. Yeah. So they're slowly making a comeback, but I don't know if we'll see them like we used to, but it is nice seeing, like, we're seeing more and more legal bucks every year, which is good.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think mule deer are taking a hit everywhere all over the West, even down the States, aren't they, Mark?
Yeah. I was super surprised. I found out today I drew a tag in Utah. I drew my archery tag that I've been wanting to get down there for a few years. And I was a little worried because my friends that live and hunt in that part of the state sent me the statistics and they cut the tags in half. But luckily I was going in for a general point or a general tag with like 5 points. So I got the hunt. But I was a little worried that I may not get it because the tags are cut in half. So if they're cutting tags in half, the deer are either not doing great or they want them. I hope they're wanting them to do better. Of course, I hope that's the reason, but I'm guessing they've taken a hit. They haven't had any bad winters down there lately, but mule deer on earth, period, just aren't thriving anywhere. I mean, pockets are thriving, you know, but their habitat's shrinking and they're just not like whitetails and coyotes. You know, they're not just, you can't just go put them somewhere and grow more of them. They don't operate like that. So
they're
tough to have them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know they did a lot of stuff in Alberta and Saskatchewan with the mule deer. Like, we can't just go to Alberta or Saskatchewan like to hunt. Now we can get host, like my brother lives in Alberta, so I can go hunt in Alberta mule deer with him, but he has to hunt or host me, and I can only do that every 2 years, I believe it is. And it's for archery only. So, and that's a short window, and, you know, archery hunting those mule deer in those big plains isn't the easiest. But, and in Saskatchewan, where they have the really big monsters, you can't even, they won't even allow out of province guys over there to hunt. You have to be a resident for 2 years before you're even allowed to hunt mule deer in Saskatchewan.
Wow.
Yeah.
And there's some monsters there.
I think the people in Utah wish it was like that there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we get rolling with Mark? Maybe you could just tell the Canadian listeners here, you know, a bit about yourself and how you became the Muley Slayer.
Okay. Yeah, you betcha, man. Told this story many times. I'll be glad to tell it again. I'm born and raised in East Texas here, rural East Texas, Longview, Texas, where I was born. Grew up there until I was about 12. Grew up small game hunting with my father and uncles and stuff and grandpa. My great-grandfather actually owned a fish market on the Sabine River. And back when you could commercially fish, you know, fresh waters in the river, and he'd sell fish at his fish market and stuff. And just grew up around hard work and the outdoors and loved it. And had a cousin that inspired me as a kid. He was a bow hunter, Tommy Young. And he just inspired me to be, well, basically he was kind of like my light on the hill. He was the guy I wanted to emulate in life. And he was just a hardcore bow hunter, always bow fishing, coming to Colorado and stuff. And, just looked up to him. And then when I was like 12, I went to a yard sale and bought the Bow Archer's Bible, actually a book by Fred Bear. And that supercharged me. And I started mowing lawns, saving money at 13, bought my first compound bow. And fell in love with it. And I, from the minute I shot a bow and arrow for the first time, I knew that was going to be a huge part of my life, the rest of my life, no matter what, you know. But I started bow hunting at 13. I didn't kill a deer till I was 23. I had no one teaching me. Tommy was my cousin, but he lived up in Longview. When I was 12, I moved down to the Houston, Texas area where I lived with my mom and my stepdad, my brother, and stayed there. And that's when I bought my bow. And my stepfather, Bill Cathro, I love him to death. He taught me, you know, the value of a dollar and how to earn a dollar. He wasn't a big hunter. Actually, he started hunting with me as a teenager, got his first buck the year after I got my first buck with guns. And that was in 1984. I got mine in 84. He got one in 85. And then we would share my 30-30. I mowed lawns and stuff and worked at a convenience store. And I bought a 30-30 and he had a shotgun. My mom bought him a shotgun and he killed a few deer with slugs. And we'd share my rifle back and forth. But all along, I kept shooting archery. And as I became an adult, I started dabbling at 3Ds and shooting and really getting into bow hunting. But back then, bow hunting meant October. You know, October was bow hunting, and as soon as it was November 1st, man, I put that down, got my 25-06, and I was rifle hunting through the end of season for deer. That's just the way it was back then. And in 94, I moved out west to El Paso and got introduced to in El Paso, Texas, with a job, and got introduced to Western hunting. And then went on my first mule deer. It was closer to go hunt in New Mexico than it was to come back into Texas and hunt somewhere. So you could get an archery tag over the counter. I paid an outfitter $150 a day for a weekend over Labor Day weekend. Me and my brother-in-law went putted around. I was working with him there in El Paso. We putted around. I'm like, shoot, man, we can do this on our own because it was National Forest. Yeah. We were riding around on ice chest with all but knocked arrows riding around the back of a truck. And if you saw a forked horn, shoot at it, right? This guy was letting us do whatever. He's like, yeah, get you a beer and a sandwich and set on ice chest. And we went and I'm like, crap, man, I can do this on my own. I'm not paying anybody for this. But it was a great experience. I tell everybody, if you've never done something out west before, first time, go with an outfitter. You'll learn what to do and what not to do. You know, it's if you can save the pennies, it's a huge learning curve if you just go with somebody. And I did that. And then the following year, I said, I can't live here no more. I can't live in El Paso. It's not a sportsman's location for like to hunt and fish. Don't live in El Paso, Texas. So I took a job transfer to the Four Corners area, which up in Aztec, New Mexico. We had a Durango, Colorado branch of the company I worked for. We serviced the Four Corners region, which is Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico. Holy moly. That's the mecca of big mule deer. You know, the world record, typical Burris killed right there in Dolores, Colorado in the Four Corners. So, I mean, I went right to, I had the Jicarilla, the Navajo Indian Reservation, and then four states. So then I got to be best friends with Jeremy Duggar, the owner of the archery shop there in Farmington. And he started teaching me how to hunt mule deer because he was a mule deer guru. That was his passion, just mule deer only. The guy went elk hunting one time and killed a 380 bulls. Like, yeah, that was fun, whatever. But he's killed, I don't know how many Boone and Crockett's Jeremy's killed. And if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see Muley Mojo. He's just my guy, man. He is my best friend. And we just shared so many great memories in camps together. But he also signed me on as a shop shooter for his archery shop through Hoyt as a co-op deal. So I got to shoot Hoyt bows. Hoyt would sponsor me with product and I'd represent his store. And I started going around shooting local 3D events in New Mexico and Colorado. And man, I got really good at it. And I became a big fish in a small pond, you know, where I was winning a lot. And then I was hunting all four states, anywhere I could get a tag. And back then you could hunt all four of those states there were always leftovers in Utah. There were leftovers on the Navajo, and you could buy in New Mexico, Colorado, and in Arizona, you could buy over-the-counter tags. So I would have four or five mule deer tags in my pocket in September. And some of those New Mexico and Colorado, New Mexico and Arizona back then, if you didn't fill in September, you could hunt January also, hunt the late hunt. So I had a lot of experience hunting mule deer because that was my resource, right? So wherever you live, that's your resource. You're only as good as what's in front of you. And so mule deer was what I had the most of. It was affordable. I was a blue collar guy. I'd get elk tags in my home state because I could buy them as to get them as a resident. But I only killed a couple in New Mexico. I didn't do that great in New Mexico. But man, I started going to over-the-counter units in Colorado. Man, I get a bull every year. And that's what we really just thrived on, eating the elk meat. And then somewhere around 2000, I started trophy hunting, where not trophy hunting, but just looking for mature deer. I was looking for four. So I started off shooting spikes, forked horns. I didn't care, 3 points. So just because I was killing four mule deer in September, they were all forked horns. So they were 3 points and 2 points and spikes. But then when I got sponsored, that changed the game a little bit, because you want to do good for your manufacturers, catalog pictures, and you just want to look better. You know, you want to look like you know what you're doing. So I started trying to up my game, shoot bigger animals. And so in 2000, I killed my first Pope and Young mule deer. Me and Jeremy killed two great bucks in one day. He killed a big 28-inch 3x3, and I killed a 4-point that made Pope and Young that day. And killed him the same morning on the Navajo. And from there, right after that, I moved to Denver, Colorado, and started shooting. Denver had a much bigger pool of 3D archers. They actually had a pro division in Colorado, and there were some great professional archers living in Colorado that are still there today. And man, I jumped into the pro ranks and started shooting with those guys and started winning locally. So then I upped my game and started shooting nationally in the 3D circuits all along the South. So all those ASAs and IBOs, I started shooting a lot. Never won a national event, but I was always like in the hunt. You know, I was holding my own, shooting well. Well, all this comes out. So I was sponsored in 98 by Hoyt through a shop, but by 2001 or two, I think it was 2003 actually, I got picked up at Hoyt as a pro staff for Hoyt, and I was shooting nationally. Then I started writing a lot, started writing in Eastman's Hunting Journal and Bow Hunt America and Bow Hunter and Peterson's and Bow and Arrow Magazine. I started writing how to articles, and, that propelled me then, because they're on the national stage. If you don't have a TV show, the only way to be a national person, especially back in those days, if you're not a TV celebrity, if you're not Michael Waddell, if you're not something like that, and you want to go to the next level, then you have to be a writer. And so I started writing putting good articles out in these bigger magazines. And then, man, that just propelled my career out. I got to know everybody. There's nobody in archery I don't know, or shared a camp with, or hunted with, or seen, or whatever. So that really was great. And did that until, I don't know, I kind of lost the 3D bug sometime along around 2010. I quit shooting my 3Ds and the state stuff. I moved to Texas in 2012. I wanted to come back to Texas. Had a great opportunity to relocate here. My wife and I have been married since we were 18. Her parents still live here. My parents are still here. Her parents are actually four houses down from us. They moved up here from Corpus after I moved back here, and I'm in the Dallas area. Well, anyway, I took a job, relocated back here, and now I freelance a little bit of writing stuff, found Instagram, became Insta famous, 10,000 followers. That's how you guys know me. And that's just, I just love to plug my partners. I don't call them sponsors. I have a wonderful day job and a career that I've built over 30 years. So I don't even try to make hunting my life. It's all for fun. It's my passion, and I just share it. But I am still on Hoyt hunting factory pro staff. Got to be great friends with the Weatherby family. And so I'm on Team Weatherby. So when I do pick up a gun, I shoot Weatherby rifles, hunt with, and then another partner that I just went bow fishing with is Badlands, Badlands Packs. They've been a partner with me since forever. Their packs are really the only packs I've ever really used since 98 or 99. I dabbled with a couple of others, but really when they invited me to be on their operative pro staff team in 2015, I joined that team officially, never looked back. So I use their camo, the approach camo, and their packs and stuff. So they're good partners. So really all of the sponsorships that I have that you see me in either the product catalogs or their commercials or anything, these are just products that I already use. I believe in them. I believe in the people, mainly the people behind the brand. And then I use their stuff. And It's all for fun, man. So that's kind of the Muley Slayer nutshell. And one day, how I got Muley Slayer, I was sitting on the edge of my bed one day, and I was like, man, what am I doing? I need to compile all this stuff. I need to put it somewhere. And this is when I first got on Facebook. And my friends had been calling me Muley Slayer for a long time. So I made this cool little banner, and I came up with it. And I went and bought the website, and I started Muley Slayer. And that was 10 years ago. And here I am selling hats, and that's still what I'm known as. But I live 1,000 miles from mule deer, but I'm still the Muley Slayer. Everybody started calling me Hog Slayer because that's my resource now. You know, over Eastern Texas, we have some of the world's largest, just big old nasty boars, and I bow hunt them things kill a lot of those because I can go do it any day I want to go do it. So I kind of have become the Hog Slayer, but I still have a deep burning passion for, like, I have a burning passion for mule deer in all mule deer country, but I really only have a deep passion for Southern whitetails. It's really weird. Like, I love the way East Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi whitetails, they have real dark bodies with a big black stripe, you know, right down the center of their back. They have those real chocolate antlers living in swamps, right? I love the look of those. So I only hunt those. I don't travel. I used to go to Kansas, and I don't go to Illinois, Kansas, or anywhere else. I just specifically have a deep burning passion for Southern whitetails and then mule deer. So it's really, really a weird deal, man. I haven't killed an elk in like 10 years. So.
Mule deer, wherever. Oh, it's hard not to love mule deer. I mean, everything about them I love. So when did you get really passionate about shooting big mule deer? You know, I'm looking at some of these deer you got in your wall. They're pretty impressive. So when did you start like really buckling down and like having that deep passion
for big ones? Let's see. So this may sound pompous, or this may not sound appropriate, but I'm going to say it. I don't believe I've ever killed a big one, because I think anything over 200 is big, and I still don't have a 200 incher, but I have a bunch pushing it. Right. So 186, this buck right here, 186 and some change. That's my biggest archery buck, Colorado high country. My biggest with a rifle is 195. I got some 192s.
That's a typical though, right?
Typical 4-point. Yeah, I've never even killed a non-typical. Everything I kill are big 4-point. Buck.
Like that was big. What? That was what did that one score? Sorry,
this one's 186.
186 typical is a huge deer.
Yeah, 186. And that one over there is 181 gross, 177 net. 160s and whatever. So I killed my first Pope and Young buck in 2000, and me and Duggar were kind of hunting together, and we said, hey, let's make a pact. We'll never kill a forked horn again. Okay. But we both killed one that year, and we said, okay, that's it. We're not gonna, that was like in 98 or 99. We're not never going to kill another forked horn, but we still killed forked horn. But then in 2000, it's one of those things where when I finally killed a nice one, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to go backwards. I'm not going to kill smaller than that, you know, because you could end your hunt day. Once you know a little bit about it, you can go end your hunt on day one. And that's the reason I became such a passionate bow hunter, was I wanted more time of field. You know, if you get an archery tag, you get a whole month to hunt when you live out west. But if I was only into gun hunting, I would only get a week. I'd get a week in each state. Well, if I bow hunted, I could get months to hunt. So that's why I really hardcore went at bow hunting. And it takes a lot of willpower for a young man to stop shooting, because I still believe any game is big game and all game must die with a bow. That's just my motto, man. I don't care if it's grasshoppers or whatever, man. When you're out with a bow and arrow and you see something you want to shoot and you decide you want to take it, chances are always – the odds are never in your favor, bow hunting. They just aren't. And so I respect and love everything I take with a bow and arrow. There was a while I was trying to convince myself that my gun bucks meant as much to me as my bow bucks. And they mean a lot to me because of the camaraderie, the friend I was with when I shot them, and most of them were the Duggar. But I mean, a hard to swallow pill here. They don't mean as much. They don't mean as much to me as the archery ones. Anything that I take with archery gear means a lot more to me, and because of the amount of effort and planning that I put into it. So that being said, with mule deer, I decided, I don't remember when it was, but I just decided, look, I'm going to start shooting bucks that look like me. You know, they breed some does. They kind of got fat bellies and gray hairs. They've been around a while. Those are the ones I want to shoot. I don't want to shoot the young ones that haven't had a full life yet. So score never, ever, hardly ever comes into play for me.
Right.
I'm going to look for the biggest buck on the mountain or in the valley or whatever through scouting or through intel or whatever. If none of that comes, if I don't find any intel or I don't glass up a big buck, then when I find a mature buck, I'm going to kill him. Mm-hmm. There's a buck on the wall over here I shot in Colorado with a rifle 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 2020. He's a big 4x3. When I saw him, I was with my buddy Sean. I said, we need to kill that buck. A snowstorm, blizzard, this big old buck just walking out in the snow. It was the biggest body deer I think I ever saw. And I told Sean, we need to shoot that buck, man. But we're on a migration route and those deer are moving and they're coming through oak brush and you have to be very aggressive on that hunt. And Sean had never been on that hunt. And he wasn't aggressive enough. Buck got past him. I said, hey, I'm not letting this buck get past us. I'm going to kill him. He said, kill him. Bam, I shot him. Went down there, just a big old chocolate mahogany antlered 4x3. But I took him in because they had CWD, mandatory CWD aging checking for CWD.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a biologist on hand. And when I pulled up, he said, my God, that deer's ancient. And he pulled his mouth open. And he said the deer was unageable. He said the deer was over 11 years old.
Wow.
To me, that is worth 200. That's a 200. To me,
oh yeah.
Who has killed a 12-year-old buck?
Yeah, no Who's kidding.
Done, I mean, nobody does that, right? Yeah. So sometimes score does not matter. Now, in this past season, I let my 200-incher slip away, just like smoke through my fingers, man. We found this giant buck. I had the story on Instagram, and I told it in my seminar at the Western Hunting Expo this year. Through intel, we found a buck. We jumped him up, tracked him back down, got him bedded, found him. The way he was bedded with his head in the cedar, I couldn't tell. I couldn't see his antlers. I couldn't even see if he had antlers on his head or not. I had this deer in my scope on a 257 Weatherby Magnum at 280 yards for 1 hour. My crosshairs on his ribs, finger on the trigger, off safety. I was writing an article called A Pound and a Half from Glory because I got a 3-pound trigger on my rifle and I had a pound and a half of that pulled out like three times. And I was going to smoke that buck down. And ended up, me and Tim messed around there and the deer got away from us. And sure enough, it was the buck we were after. And what's ironic is they went back looking for him between my hunt, which was a rifle hunt. Then there was a late season youth hunt where they get to hunt them in the rut. And there's two outfitters there hunting that same deer. And a governor tag holder the year before missed that deer. A muzzleloader hunter this year with an outfitter missed that deer. And then I had him in my crosshairs and didn't pull the trigger because I didn't know if it was the right deer or not. That deer turned out to be a 210-inch 4x3.
Oh,
that's how big it was. And it's giant. It was a gigantic world-class deer. And the reason I know that is when they went to scout, I told them where I tracked that deer 7 miles. Last time I saw that deer, his tongue was hanging out and he was running with another big 3x3 and they were in front of me. And I tracked that deer until I just couldn't find him that day. I think we tracked him 8 hours and lost him. And then they went. So my hunt ended after 5 days and I told them where, Tim knew where the deer was at. So him and another guy went up there looking for that deer to kill on the youth hunt. And they went up by a water trough that was close to where the deer had ran from me from. And they found him lying killed there. And that was 3 weeks after the hunt that I was on. And the deer, like he'd been dead right at 3 weeks. I think, I believe that deer ran until he was just wore out. Cause I stayed on him, man. As long as I had tracks, I was coming after him. I mean, I wasn't like running him down, but I was following him, tracking him. And I think the deer just got up there, beat down, and was old and big and laid there. And you know how mountain lions are. They kill the big mature bucks. That's what they prey on the most because they're solitary animals, right? And anyway, that was the biggest buck I think I've ever had the chance that I literally, knew I was going to shoot a deer over 200 inches. And he was just big. I didn't know what he would score, but I knew he was big, But yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy a big story. Deer. That is. It's funny how you mentioned there you have two different categories because that couldn't be more true. I mean, I know I've got a class of deer, anything that you're going to shoot, it's going to be, if you're shooting with a gun, it's definitely a lot higher class of animal than it is with a bow.
Yeah.
You're saying to you, lower your standards, not lower your standards, but it's just so much harder getting
when a real nice one gets close, you're going to shoot it with a bow. It's just hard not to.
Yeah.
Unless absolutely. You're just one of these super premium elite guys like Sean Morgan or Randy Ulmer that, They just only hunt world-class deer. I'm just not that guy. I am now a traveling out-of-state hunter. You know, I'm the muley slayer and I love mule deer. I don't live in mule deer country. So when I leave, I'm going just like everybody else. I'm going on a week's vacation. I'm going back to areas I know that hold deer. And when I find one that trips my trigger, I'm gonna kill it. One of my, probably one of my most prized treasures, favorite bucks I've ever killed is a non-scoring, he's hanging over here, 4x3. I called Lucky Seven, and I wrote that article for Mule Deer Foundation. That's what I called him. That deer had like 9 lives, man. That deer was a 5-year-old 4x3. But I was in Utah for 15 days, and this is a unit that has gun hunting. So this wasn't one of those exclusive archery-only Utah hunts. There's gun hunts in there, so the age class was just not there. Finding a big, older buck was kind of hard. But I found these little pockets of deer, and I stayed in there 15 days. I slept 14 nights on the mountain. I'd go down and get water. If you had to haul water, I was hauling 4 gallons of water 4 miles just to have water on that mountain. And I stayed up there, and that was in 2015. And on the 15th day, I killed this buck, and I'd watched 2 other hunters miss him in those 14 days. And I slipped in. I just went all in, just dove off a canyon. I knew there were deer down in this real thick, nasty draw. And I just went, I got down, stripped down to just my shorts. I had a leafy jacket on, painted my face. I'm just going all in today, man. And I just dove off in there with just socks on, climbed down the bottom of this canyon. And I mean, I walked right up on 5 bucks in their beds, and they didn't even know I was there. They knew something happened. They just stood up. And when that biggest one, I knew who he was, that 4x3, I shot him. And man, it was the most meaningful. I just gave everything on that and got him. That was one of my favorites. And he was mature. He was gray, fat belly. 4x3, not huge, but older deer. But man, just the way that all played out,
yeah,
that one's awesome. Going to stick with me a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. I have the same thing with mule deer. Like I've been, you know, I don't have nearly as many mule deer as you do. I've done pretty good over the last couple of years, but it's taken a lot of hard work. And I found last year, I didn't get as much time to scout, and it's definitely reflected in mule deer hunting. But again, then, you know, I was hunting a different area, and I wanted to, you know, I was bound and determined last year I was just going to hunt bow only last year all year, so made things a little harder. But yeah, the my most memorable one is, you know, it's just a plain small 4x2, nothing special, but you know, just the effort it took and the way I ended up retrieving it is, you know, it's just something I'll never forget. But you mentioned at the beginning you were shooting, you know, just smaller class bucks, working your way up to getting to where you're like, finally one day, okay, you know what, killed enough of these now, you know, I'm going to be a little more picky on, you know, what class of mule deer I want to harvest. Now it seems like you get guys, all they're worried about is score. They want to jump from 0 to like top of the list. They want, you know, over 200 inch mule deer, and they haven't put the time. And I imagine you must get that a lot. Like guys just, you know, drilling you for questions or asking, you know, hey, I've never shot a mule deer before, but I want my first one to be a 200 inch mule deer.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it a lot, man. I used to get, hey, I don't want your honey hole. I just want a spot. Well, yeah, you really do want a honey hole. You want me to just put a dot on a map for you is what you really want. Just say it, man. You want me to put a dot on the map, and then you want to just go shoot the biggest buck on the mountain. Well, so do I, man. But I used to be like that. Like I would want that, but now I don't want that. I do not want anyone to put a dot on a map to tell me it was a big buck. I want the experience just to unfold for me, that I found it and I killed it because of my own merits, because of what I'm able to get accomplished. And I don't want any intel. I mean, I would love for someone to tell me, hey, yeah, man, I scouted up this giant buck. And that's what happened with my biggest buck ever, my 195 buck. I got the tag with one of my buddies that's an outfitter in New Mexico, and I applied through him so I could get the tag, because it was a larger allotment went to outfitters. Well, he's my friend. So me and Jeremy Duggar both got the tags through my outfitter friend. And man, all these guys got together and they wanted to help me, and they all found the buck. And I literally marched out of camp, climbed up on the hill, and I was the assassin, and I killed my biggest mule deer. It was a beautiful moment, man. It was a great deer, 195 buck. We called him Decepticon. Everybody thought that deer was in the 180s and nobody else wanted to shoot him. I took one look, said, no way, man, that thing's Boone. I'm shooting him. He was 195. He had real light tips, so it looked like he didn't have any tips, but they were light colored. Oh, and I guess I had the sunlight, whatever. It was a huge deer, man. And I got him, and I love him, and I'm so proud of him. And it was a great deer. Pale in comparison to that little 4x3 I spent 15 days on the mountain, finally killed my bow and arrow. Again, would I trade any of it? No, they were all different experiences.
Yeah.
But But yeah, I think people that just want the if you want to kill a deer, like if you don't have a passion, you don't have the experience of hunting, but you want the fruit of something like that, you want a 200 inch deer, that's all you really care about. Well, you probably want to be famous also. That's probably why you want that, so that you can get some recognition for being a great hunter. And I tell everybody, you know, I'm that older wisdom guy now, and I tell everybody, you can be careful with fame, because if you set out to be famous, it's probably not going to happen. But if you go do something great and you become something great in life, the fame's going to come no matter what. Go do what you love, and if something comes of it, great. But if you're setting out to be famous, you're just going to fall short. And I think you're going to have a lot more people not liking you if you're not passionate about mule deer and you just want a 200 inch or so that you have that credential, you know, you have that street cred of a 200.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, you might. I know a guy in the industry. He's only killed a couple of deer. He's killed a couple of really great big deer, but he doesn't have any depth. Right. You can't sit around the campfire and talk about remember wins with this guy, because he's been on a couple of hunts, killed a couple of big deer, and then it's like he's talking about crap that I'm not interested in, you know?
Yeah.
I'd rather sit down with a guy that's killed 15 bucks that are over 150, 160, and have some good meat potato stories.
Oh yeah.
Than a guy that's gone and killed a couple of big ones and then he just kind of fizzles out there, you know? And that might be far from what you asked me, but that's my opinion on all of that. That's where I'm at on all of it. And I don't take away from anybody's achievements. I don't take away from that man's achievements, but I don't like for someone to go shoot a big deer and then want to put themselves in the same category as a guy that's got a whole lifetime experience that may not have that size deer, but has all these other ones.
Yeah. There is no comparison with that.
No, it's just not, man. There's just no depth to that person or to his own experience. So
no, and I think if you want just a world class animal, whether it's a mule deer, elk, doesn't matter what it is, I think you best just to save your pennies and go through a guide and get it. I think that's if you're gonna do it. But then again, you're not gonna have that. Ain't gonna do you any good because, I mean. Like as a hunter, I grew up hunting. I want to be able to pass this knowledge on to my children. You know, my dad taught me the things he knew. Obviously, I took the stuff that he knew, and you know, my dad wasn't a backpack hunter, so it kind of evolved in different ways. But you know, you want to pass that knowledge on through generations and generations. And if you're just out to get a big deer or a big elk or whatever it is you're going to get, you're not going to have those if you're not putting the time into to learn all the, you know, the hardships are the biggest thing, I think.
Oh yeah. And that's what I cherish the most I listen to Bobby Worthington, a great whitetail hunter. I listen to him on Southern Outdoorsman podcast. That's a podcast I was just on with a whitetail that I killed this year. And I was listening to it and he said, I would gladly trade all of the buck I've had inside 20 yards of my tree and didn't get for all of the ones that I have got. Because he's had some giants slip through his fingers and he's got walls of giants. So I can't even imagine what his wall would look like if he had those. But man, I find myself daydreaming about the ones I did not get way more than thinking about bucks I've killed, you know.
But if it wasn't for those ones that, if it wasn't for the ones that got away, you wouldn't have the ones you have on your wall today.
No. They all teach me something. And I thank them, Paul. I thank them for the lesson. Whether if they die at the end of the hunt or if they get away at the end of the hunt, I thank them for the lesson because they all teach me something.
Yeah, absolutely. All of them.
For me, it's the memories that come. Like for us, our deer, our mule deer are coming into the rut, you know, beginning in November. And it's, you got about 9 days where they're really running around for the most part, where I am in BC anyway. The big boys usually don't come down lower until like the 15th or so, but by then the season's over. But when you go hunting in the beginning of November, it's about a week and a half after elk season has shut down. So by then the elk have totally chilled out. And I was talking to Kevin about this, another podcast. I brought my brother out here for his first mule deer hunt and everything. I was like, no, everything's starting in the rut for deer. And we'd run into herds of elk and we're within 30, 40 yards of elk that are still bugling because it's getting cold out and they're all frisky. And it's like, I don't even want you guys anymore. Like, this is cool. I want that buck. I know that's, you know, still another half mile past you. And I know he's somewhere over in there and you guys are in between and you have to stalk this elk herd basically to get to where you want to go. And it was like virtually every day we were in the elk and the elk were our biggest pain in the ass. It wasn't the deer. It was like, I know those deer somewhere in that vicinity, but it was trying not to have the elk blow out. So now you got those great memories of those interactions with the elk, and it's just like, no, I'm not even trying to hunt you anymore. Like, you guys are good. Like, piss off. Like, I'm trying to get that other guy over there. It's eating all your grass.
Sure.
He ended up getting one though, didn't he, Pete? That was his first mealy.
Yeah. He was actually on the one day off my wife had from work. So she was a little pissed about that because that was the day I would have taken her out.
Oh.
So she still claims that was her buck. But he got a nice one. I did a Euro mount for him. It's actually his birthday today too. So
awesome.
I posted that up and I did a Euro mount for him, and he'll have to come down and get it because can't really ship that up to him. But he's never hunted anything like that. And he got a beautiful 4-point. No, it's actually, it was a 5x4, a couple weird stickers on it. And the smile on that guy's face was something else. He's never hunted anything like that. So
there's nothing like the first in hunting, whether it's your first or somebody else's that you're with. You can't beat the first of anything, especially, when you get, it's awesome when you get your first, because you've seen, you've been through the hardship, you work so hard, and then you had so many failures, and then when it finally works together, all the stars align and you connect on it, it's awesome. But at the same time, when you're with somebody and it happens for them, it's for the most part, it's just as special.
I was probably jumping higher than he was, like up and down, just stoked for him, just like
absolutely.
I have two grandsons and the third one on the way. I'm gonna tell you something, my son grew up hunting. He's my number one hunting partner, but he wasn't hardcore. He didn't have the bug hardcore, but he's a good hunter. He hunts a lot now. But my two grandsons, my daughter, she's the oldest, she had her son's Mason, he's 10 or 11 now, and Carson's 8. But both of those kids, I've been with them when they shot. I took them, they got hogs with rifles, and then my other grandson Carson got him a deer this year, a doe with a gun. Man, nothing. Even though there's a video, if you go back 2020 in the winter of 2020 on my Instagram, me and Mason are in a ground blind. It's a tent, little ground blind that my cousin has set up for archery hunting. And he said, man, there's been a bunch of hogs coming in here. And I took Mason in there. Mason fell asleep on the ground, and this nice boar came in, this like nice boar, man. I could see his teeth and everything. He's right there at 12 yards, just gobbling the corn up. And I can't wake Mason up. And Mason had on this brustly jacket. It was not even a real hunting jacket. When he wakes up, he sleeps really, really hard, like my daughter, like his mother. And man, when he woke up, he just sat up and the hog ran off. I'm like, dude, there was a boar right there. He was deflated. And as we're sitting there, I'm just sitting looking at his face going, man, you just blew a majorly awesome. And all of a sudden his eyes get huge and he points. And I look, there's 15 hogs right here coming in. And he gets that 22-250 out the window. And the biggest sow out there was 120 pounds. Man, he shot her in the eyeball, dropped her. And I went absolutely freaking retarded, stupid nuts in that tent. And I just, oh my gosh, man. Like I'm crying, laughing, and you can see it also on that video. And he was at that age where he lost some teeth. So he just had like one, like I call it his walrus tusk. He had just one big tooth and he has a lisp anyway. I just killed a hog. And man, I'm freaking out. I'm like, man, I would trade everything I've done in hunting for that. And then, and then Carson, Carson don't get too worked up. He's just a stone cold killer. That guy, Mason, he scares me a little bit. Mason gets emotional about it, like me, like excited. Carson's just like businessman, dusted it, toasted it, got it. You don't, like, he shows no emotion. He'll like knuckle you, high five, but he's like, just business for him, man. He's a killer. But yeah,
like, I'm just waiting for my sponsors to show up.
Yeah, he killed a big old 200 pound boar. And then the next day he got that doe, and man, he just had like, it was his weekend, man. But they love it, man. And now I just found out on Mother's Day, that Travis and Cameron, that's my son. They're pregnant, and we just found out it's a boy. So all my third grandson.
Congratulations.
So yeah,
nice. Congratulations.
I'm Jack. That'll be my 8th grandchild. Wow. But I think Travis always said he was going to do 5. So we'll see. I don't know. His wife may be like, nah, but that, my daughter has 3 daughters and a son, and my son has 2 daughters and a son, and then this other son on the way. So pretty amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, it's pretty, pretty lucky for those kids who go up. They have a grandpa, you know, the muley stayers, a grandpa get to pass on all that knowledge. That's pretty awesome.
Oh yeah. Every grandkid means this is time for me to go buy another gun. And I don't discriminate. I'll take girls and boys hunting or fishing. My daughter, we were living in Colorado when my daughter was a teenager, and I felt like my connection with my daughter wasn't quite there the way I wanted it. So I booked us a hunt in Texas, and me and her jumped on an airplane. She brought her mom's target bow. And when she was 13, she killed her first pig with a bow and arrow down here in Texas. Wow. Awesome. And now she's killed, I don't know how many hogs she's killed with a bow. She shot a mule deer. She shot a ram, you know, on one of these hunts. She shot like a Corsican ram with a bow and arrow. And she's a 33-year-old mom of four. And they did really good on their, and her husband is a sheriff deputy there in Tennessee. They live in Tennessee. And this year she had a really good income tax return. And she's like, hey, I want a new bow. I want my own bow that I bought. And so I ordered her up a Hoyt Eclipse, and she came in. Nice. There's pictures from last month on my Instagram. And man, my daughter, number one, she's like an 11. She's a supermodel. She's 5'9" blonde, just a beautiful lady. And then she shoots as good as any man I know. So she's like, we call her Super Casey because she's just awesome. Amazing. She's an amazing lady, beautiful, and she's deadly. And so she's coming out, and she always comes and hangs around camp. We have a big camp where we hunt over in East Texas. And when they come in, she usually hangs around the campfire with the kids, and I take the boys out. But I told her this year in October, I was like, bring your bow. And my wife will go watch the kids, and I'm going to take her and put her in a couple of my stands, let her shoot some of my deer and shoot some hog with her bow and stuff. Cause she loves it. Like, she loves bow hunting only. Like Travis, he don't care. Crossbow, rifle, recurve, shotgun, muzzleloader. He likes all of that. Mm-hmm. Casey, she's just straight bow hunter, straight up. She wants to bow hunt everything. So I'm going to put her back into hunting, and we're going to have a good time with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's awesome. It's hard not to be romantic about bow hunting. It's just, you know, for guys who don't do it, you just can't explain it. And for the guys who do it, they know it.
Yeah, I do. But Adam Weatherby, if you're listening, I still love you, brother. And I do love your guns. But Adam knows I'm a bow hunter at heart. He goes, I love bow hunters. I just hope that when bow hunters do pick up guns, they pick up Weatherbys.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, just a great American brand. And they're just such good Christian people that it's hard not to support those guys. So.
Yeah, no, we've had Adam on the show, you know, he's a great guy. I wonder if he's ever shot a bow.
I don't know, but I want to get him into a Hoyt really bad. I might just buy him one and send it one day and just say, hey, you're a bow hunter now, go shoot this thing. Problem is, he'd probably love it. He's like, he don't have the bandwidth to be jacking around with a bow, developing cartridges and stuff. But I know Adam, and if he tried it, if he had just one sliver of success with that thing, he'd be, hell, he'd probably start building bows.
Yeah.
I honestly think too that when you start bow hunting and you, like, I won't even say like if you kill anything, it doesn't even matter. If you get close to animals that like as close as you have to get to actually harvest one, even if you have to resort back to your rifle to fill the freezer, whatever, I believe it honestly makes you a better hunter overall.
Oh yeah.
Because you have to overcome so many more adversities just to get to that point of even being able to pull the trigger. You know, I know lots of guys and I totally respect them. You know, it's like, I dropped that elk at 600 yards. That's an impressive shot. You know, didn't go 20, just dropped right there. And it's like, yeah, I'd rather tell you I heard that sucker breathing behind me, or it had three gray whiskers off its nose or something like that. To me, it's just nothing against them, but it's like, you've had to work. You've had to think, you've had to overthink to get to that position to actually take that animal, especially if you're on the ground.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that come into play with it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things that could go wrong when you're that close to an animal, and it's, you know, their natural instinct is they want to live. And when I first started bow hunting, you get real humbled about how, I'm not going to say bad of a hunter you are, but just how, you know, it's just a combination of how loud you are, how much, you know, just all the things you do wrong that you don't have to do when you're at 150, 200 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to remember it's their life.
Yeah.
It's fun for you, but it's their life. They live and they outsmart a lot of animals to stay alive, to get to that age, you know, and you're just a peon compared to a, you know, a mountain lion is the greatest mule deer hunter of all. Somebody asked me at my seminar this last year in February at Salt Lake. They're like, who is, if you had to say the very best mule deer hunter in the world, who is it? It's like any given mountain lion, anywhere, any day. Yeah. Yeah. They kill them with their hands and teeth, man. And here you just want to get close enough to shoot it with a bow, but mountain lions are just amazing hunters. But, and two, they just killed the biggest buck I was ever after. So I was like, man, I'm gonna have to start hunting like a mountain lion. If you want to prey on, that's kind of what my theme of my seminar was. If you want to prey on big, mature, solitary bucks, just go hang out around water holes and cliff edges and things where big bucks go. Go hang out. That's what mountain lions do.
Yeah,
that's where I always find deadheads. And that's it. Start finding consistency. Start pinning where you find deadheads that are big and mature, and say, hey, okay, every one of these have something in common. It's, you know, what kind of drainage was it? And how was the lay of the land there? What's the wind typically like there? Well, mountain lions keep up with that. They know where to hunt down and kill big bucks. And so I started paying attention to that, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they have the genetics to kill. Like those mountain lions, they're built to kill. They're impressive animals. I've hunted mountain lions and they are just one impressive animal. Them and wolves, like next to wolves, I mean, you know, wolves are pretty impressive too, but they need a pack to do it, where a mountain lion, it's just, you know, they run solo.
Yeah.
And man, they're effective at what they do.
Which is even crazier on your one mule deer, as old as it was.
Yeah.
Like you think of how many or how many predators, humans, everything, it outsmarted.
Yeah.
Until you didn't know, or until it didn't outsmart you.
It's like, I think he was like, because it was broad. I shot him in the middle of the morning, like 11 o'clock, snow coming down sideways. It was beautiful scenery, man. Like, it's that in your mind's eye, you're like, do you ever picture the biggest mule deer you've ever seen walking slow and stiff legged in the snow, and you've got a Weatherby with a 14 power scope? It was like, wow. I know I'm going to get him. You know, like when I realized Sean wasn't going to shoot him, I knew I was going to shoot him, and I knew I was going to get him. I'm pretty sure I was going to get him. And when I shot him and went up there, I was like, yeah, that's a big old deer, man. And he's impressive. He's nice. But then when I found out what I really shot, it was almost surreal for a minute, because he was so big. Like, it was abnormally big, long body, dark. But then when I started looking at his teeth, and then when I knew he was old, when that biologist said, this deer's not even ageable. When you get the teeth that low, it's just like, I started thinking about that stuff. Like, he lived through that bad winter that, you know, that killed all the deer back, you know, so many years ago. And he lived through mountain lions and wildfires and, man, who knows what all. So, but he didn't have any bullets or broadheads in him. So he, you know, at least that was cool. But I've killed several mule deer that had scars, mountain lion scars on the inside of their thighs. I killed a buck still in velvet one time in November that had fresh scars from that summer that were across his scrotum and inside his thigh. And I think a lot of times those mountain lions, when they try to catch bucks, you'll see a lot of cactus. I think that's why when you see a lot of these cactus mountain bucks that have either mutilated or testicles gone, a lot of times I think mountain lions, that's when they try to catch them, you know?
And they
give them a little, and then they turn into cactus bucks. But I've killed several mule deer that had big scars on the inside of their thighs from mountain lions.
Oh yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, those things. Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. When you think of really of like what a deer has to go through to survive, and especially like to die of old age, it's pretty impressive. You know, for the ones that do make it that far, you think like, you know, like a mountain lion needs a deer every 9 to 10 days. It's got to be killing. It's got to be eating a deer. And then you have, you know, where, depending where you are, you got wolves, bears, you know, wolverines, coyotes, you know, you name it, humans, vehicles.
When you start talking like that and thinking like that, that's when you finally appreciate that, because you've matured into a real sportsman, a real hunter, a conservationist. You know, that's when I was 26, I wanted to know everything I could find about killing a mule deer. That's when I really had the bug at 26. Like, that's when I knew I had it. Like, I wanted to know everything I could about killing a mule deer. Then when I was 46, I would tell people, man, now at 46, I want to do everything I can to save a mule deer, have a mule deer. And that's when I became a life member of the Mule Deer Foundation. And now Muley Slayer is a sponsor every year of the Mule Deer Foundation. And that's when I go out to Salt Lake. You know, I don't, that's my donation back to that. You know, they take care of me when I get there, but I don't charter them anything. I just go out there and I give my seminars on how to and try to promote good ethical hunting and conservation of mule deer. And man, they need us like more than than ever right now. You know, if we're going to talk about them, we need to talk about that too. You know, hunting them down and killing them and eating them is awesome. Love it. But if you don't have them, you don't get to do any of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, man, I tell everybody at that big show, have you ever been to the Western Hunting and Expo? Western Hunting and Conservation in Salt Lake? It's the biggest, baddest, coolest hunting, Western hunting show there is, man. And all that money goes to, you know, back to conservation. Those conservation tags are, you know, there's a little bit of controversy about it all. But I've studied the science. I follow the money. It's good for deer. It's good for deer hunting. The Mule Deer Foundation absolutely puts money on the ground in mule deer country. And man, you walk in there and everybody goes in there to buy their hats and their supplements and then all the cool stuff and the trendy stuff, but you have to walk right past the Mule Deer Foundation booth. I'm like, man, before you go spend $50 to $100 on all your supplements and t-shirts to go along with it to look cool, you got to walk right past the Mule Deer Foundation booth, stop and spend your $35 there. You get 4 issues a year of MDF magazine. You're putting money on the ground in mule deer country. And, you know, the numbers need to be up, you know, just like with Howl or anything else, our numbers need to be up all across the board. I'm a member of, if I hunt your state, I belong to your state hunting organization. Awesome. So like right now I'm a current member of the Utah Bow Hunters Association. I'm current in the CBA, Colorado Bow Hunters, LSBA, Lone Star Bow Hunters. If you hunt that state, be a member of their deal and be have the numbers, show support for what we're doing. Same thing for mule deer. I mean, that's a little bit of a soapbox, but I got to put it in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Man. No,
you got to, man.
Well, you have to. You're not, if we don't put back into it, we're not, you know, it's not us. It's going to be our kids. And that's when I really got involved in looking at it in a different light, is when my kids start coming around and getting, you know, my oldest is 10 now and he's a new hunter this year. But you know, when he was about 4 or 5 years old, I really started to think, I'm like, hey man, like I need to start paying attention to what's going on here long-term, not just what I want for the short-term, because at the end of the day, it makes no difference how many mule deer I harvest. If there's not mule deer on the landscape, it doesn't mean anything, because if without the next generations getting access to it, it's all for nothing.
Right. Absolutely.
Thanks again for hopping on the show. I know we had kind of a scheduling there blip on my part, but you know, I really appreciate your time, and it's always fun to talk mule deer. And I mean, we didn't really get into any of the mule deer tactics, but it's just great to catch up with you and talk mule deer.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Anytime. I've been on a bunch of podcasts and I enjoy doing them, and they always seems like we get to talking and we don't ever talk tactics. I was on one time and I finally got to talk about how I approach high country mule deer and stuff. And, but it really don't matter, because with mule deer, there's not a book. I mean, Robbie Denning is a great friend of mine, and the Eastman family, and they've all written books on mule deer hunting, and those books get you pointing in the right direction. Robbie's got a new book coming out. If you guys haven't had Robbie on, you need to get him on.
Yeah,
Robbie's good, man, and he's got a new book coming out. I wrote the foreword for him, actually. It's pretty awesome, man, to get asked to do that. So me and Robbie are wonderful brothers in Christ. We're good friends, and we share a lot of info in his books and David Long's books. I'm in both of David Long's books. I got articles in there. Those get you started in the right direction, but really, the best way to learn mule deer hunting is just to go get after them, man.
Yeah,
because there's no book can teach you the things you're going to learn on the ground.
No, man. And like I said, that's one of the things that drew me instantly to mule deer, is because you can't call them, you can't pattern them, no matter what you do. Just when you think you got them all figured out, they let you know you don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, we're gonna let you go. And thanks again. You got anything to add, Pete?
Oh, as maybe if we get you on again next time, we'll try to focus on tactics right away, and then we'll go into the BSing afterwards.
Sure. Let's do it. Let's do a 2.0 just whenever you guys are ready.
Okay, sounds great. Good. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Mark. Thank you. We'll talk to you later, Pete.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to the Focus Hunting Podcast. It's coming at you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective. Quick shout out to the sponsors of the show, Vortex Optics, the best in optics, period. Backroads Maps Books, never get lost with Backroads Maps. AKU Boots, you owe it to your feet. Scree Hunting Gear. Now, if you guys check the show notes, you're going to find some promo codes. Use them. Save a bit. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Spend your Saturdays with life on the water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow. Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.